walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Bridget Watson, the president of Mission Reunite, nonprofit organization that aims to assist pet owners whose animals are missing, offering guidance on the behavior of missing pets, including how, for example, certain dogs might behave differently in that situation than other dogs, effective search techniques, and so on. Mission Reunite also provides suggestions on steps to take to prevent animals from going missing in the first place. We'll hear about how Mission Reunite came to be, some of the most important things to do to guard against your pets slipping away, and if they do get out, some of the most effective ways to get the word out that the animal is missing and how to track them down. All that when I speak with Bridget Watson in just a moment or so here on Talking Animals. And a programming note, next week I will not be here, but I'm pleased to say the dynamic duo of Bev Capshaw and Ronnie Elliott will be here. It's always a treat when they host Talking Animals, so be sure to tune in next Wednesday and join them for that. When I return the following Wednesday, August 15th, my guest will be U.S. Attorney Jim Easterly, who recently taught a course in Botswana on combating illegal wildlife trafficking. That's a tough world with violence and crime surrounding the trafficking, not to mention the impact poaching and the trafficking itself has on the population of elephants, rhinos, pangolins, and others. Easterly has deep expertise here, so I'm really looking forward to speaking with him. That's 2 weeks from today, August 15th, on Talking Animals on WMNF. Also on today's show, later on, is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll offer a DVD copy of the terrific documentary, Blackfish. Right now, though, let's get to Bridget, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnet.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Bridget Watson on Talking Animals. Good morning, Bridget.
Good morning, Duncan. Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining me on Talking Animals. And before we hear about Mission Reunite, let's hear a bit about you. So apart from serving as president of Mission Reunite, how else are you involved with animals at the moment?
Well, I've been an animal lover all my life, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out in animal sheltering as a teenager, as a volunteer.
And where was this?
In San Mateo County.
Okay.
And so I started as a volunteer and got thrown into the crazy world of animal welfare, where I've been ever since.
Wow. So from that first foray as a teenager, how long did you spend in the sheltering world?
Well, in my first round, I burned out pretty quickly, because this was back in the late 80s, early 90s, when it was a very difficult place to work. There was a lot of euthanasia. There were a lot of good people really trying to make change, but we weren't where we are today in regard to life-saving. So I burned out pretty quickly, got out of the business. I did pet sitting and worked with horses and did other things for a while. And then about 10 years later, got back into it.
And was that at the same shelter you had been at, or a different shelter?
No, I was living in a different area at the time.
Okay.
So I became the shelter supervisor for Santa Clara County, which I did for 6 years, and that was a really good experience.
Okay, so in that intervening time, things had really changed in terms of the emotional wear and tear and other things that lead to the kind of burnout that sent you packing the first time.
Yes, there's been a lot of improvement in life-saving, and it continues today. A lot of better practices and focus on adoptions and foster programs. There's so many good things going on out there right now with Maddie's Fund and Petco Foundation helping shelters out. And of course, our focus, which is return to owner.
Yeah, well, I of course want to get into that in a moment. But just since I'm starting to see that we have a bit of a through line already, I'd just like to trace that back even a bit further if we could for just one sec. So how long have animals been important to you? I mean, what was your formative years like in terms of animals?
Well, as a child, we had cats. We weren't allowed to have a dog, and I always wanted a dog. We went and visited a relative once, and they had a litter of puppies that I think they were fostering for some rescue. And I was so small that I thought we were going to keep one of the puppies. So I carried the puppy around all day, and I cried when we went home because I didn't understand we were just visiting. Okay. But the cats I had were really an important part of my life, and I still am surrounded by cats as I am at this moment. And so later in life, I got into horses. I started riding horses and getting to know them and getting to know and love all sorts of animals. So they've always been a big part of my life.
And just out of curiosity, when you were in the childhood years, what was the prohibition on dogs as opposed to being okay with cats?
Well, I lived with my grandparents, and so they didn't really want animals in the house. So we had cats. They could be outside or in the garage, and they sure didn't want a dog, you know, in their nice, clean house.
I see. Okay, so it sounds like a bit of a compromise, so you could at least have some kind of animal in your world. Yeah,
exactly.
Cool. So at what point in the either having animals growing up or getting into horses and then your two stints in the shelter world, I'm guessing, maybe not though, that there was at least one experience along the way with a missing pet?
Not so much with myself, but I think working in shelters and just seeing the euthanasia and seeing, even if you're not euthanizing and you're holding animals for adoption, you just see how futile it is that you're taking in all these stray animals and then they're just sitting in the shelter for weeks and months waiting for someone to adopt them at a great cost. It's a very stressful environment for both animals and people. And then one day you realize that all these animals have a home, and where are the owners and why aren't they here? And why aren't we questioning that? So I think it's just that day after day, year after year futility. And I think anyone working in shelters would understand that you realize there's got to be a better way. And I don't know why we didn't think of this sooner or focus on it sooner.
No, it is interesting because, as you point out, it's so directly part and parcel of the shelter world, because typically, at least when animals go missing, depending on who does what, when they spot that missing animal, chances are it's going to end up at the county or whatever facility, shelter. And then what happens then is, I guess, all kinds of variables come into play.
Exactly. And they may end up at the local shelter or they may end up somewhere else. There's many, many places that a missing pet can end up. A finder may keep them, assuming that they've been abandoned, or the finder may live in another county, so they may bring the animal there. So once that pet gets into the system, it's very difficult for the owner to figure out where they are and get them back.
We'll get into that more directly in just a sec, but I want to let folks know this is Talking Animals on Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Bridget Wasson, president of Mission Reunite, which seeks to assist pet owners whose animals are missing, including offering guidance on the behavior of missing pets, effective search techniques, and more. If you'd like to ask Bridget a question about missing pets, maybe you have one missing or recently had one missing, or otherwise offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. Let's delve into Mission Reunite. So I believe it was founded the better part of 15 years ago, but under what circumstances exactly?
So when the organization was originally founded, before I was involved or even knew about it, the focus was more on training people to individually assist owners in finding their missing pets. So basically being like a pet detective. And that was great for helping individual people in smaller communities. And that went on for some years. But when I got involved, coming from the shelter background, I realized that we were going to get more bang for our buck training shelters, because many of them are taking in 5, 10, 15,000 animals a year. So that's 15,000 animals you can help instead of just a handful.
And I know this predates your involvement, but still, just to back up for one sec, what was the thinking or the rationale behind forming the organization with its kind of original focus? What prompted people to do that, and who were those founders?
Well, the original founding members realized that there was just a dearth of services for people looking for a missing pet, that people were simply told to go to the shelter, and people have no idea how to do that. And they didn't understand the behavior of missing pets. So the group of people involved at that time realized that this was a need that needed to be filled. So started coming up with some ideas to help serve the public in that way.
Even amongst sort of animal lovers and advocates, it's a fairly uncommon sort of organization, at least in my experience. And yet, as we've already heard, I mean, it makes perfect sense. And the fact, again, that it hooks so directly into the shelter world where many of these animals inevitably end up, you know, I guess it's almost surprising the other way around that there aren't more places, and maybe there are, and I'm just not aware of them, like I wasn't until recently aware of Mission Reunite, that sort of have the same objective.
Well, there is one other national nonprofit called Lost Dogs of America, and that's another big one that we're aware of. And there's a lot of more community-based groups out there, people who aren't necessarily a nonprofit, but who run Facebook pages, who volunteer at their local shelters, and who help their community. So it is a growing movement as people realize the scope of the problem and how much help people really need.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I've had a fairly prominent pet detective on the show, and then did a big story all about pet detectives for the Washington Post a year or so ago. And among the things that was interesting there was that some of the key pet detectives, especially that have been doing it a long time, were kind of doing what in some ways what you've described is really trying to work more closely with shelters and really give them techniques and others too, so that, again, there just wouldn't be such a steady influx of lost or missing or whatever the term would be appropriate here, animals, which again, often they aren't found or reunited with their owners. So sometimes just that kind of guidance, but it seemed like it was sort of a budding, when I was doing the story, at least on the cusp of being a budding, at least regional, if not national program that was really going to focus on exactly those issues.
Yeah, and we're super excited to see this movement grow and to see more support for it. As I mentioned, groups like Maddie's Fund and Petco Foundation that offer grants, fairly sizable grants, to animal welfare organizations. Historically, those have been support for adoption programs, spay neuter programs that are very important, but not involving missing pets. And so we are seeing now that they are granting funds for shelters to conduct training, to purchase equipment. So this is something that I've been doing lately, is directly helping shelters to come up with some ideas for their grant proposals. And of course, not everybody gets a grant, so it can be a little frustrating, but you have to ask and put it out there.
Sure.
To get that support for the things that you need to make improvements to that program.
And again, it just seems so natural, because if a shelter has X amount of animals in there and they're looking to adopt them out and do whatever things, but if, you know, some subset of those have arrived and they a week or a month or whatever, or several weeks prior, were living with the family and they just need to find a way to reconnect, which is sometimes a tall task. I mean, it just seems like that would go a long way, these kind of more structured programs like you're helping with and the one that I alluded to really sort of winnow down some of that shelter population.
Absolutely. And when you realize that most shelters that take in strays, now some don't, some only do owner surrenders or maybe pull from other shelters after the stray period, but most shelters that take in strays, 75 to 80% of their population are strays. So by not addressing that, you're ignoring the obvious. If you could reduce that by even 5% or 1%, any reduction is going to be an improvement.
You're certainly at least plugging a pretty powerful dike there. Yeah. So let's talk about some of how this all goes down with pets missing. What are the most common reasons pets go missing? And I imagine that we should sort of, for now at least, treat cats and dogs and maybe other pets if we have time separately. So dogs, for example, the chief cause of them disappearing is what?
So you're right in that dogs and cats are different, and then in some cases they aren't really missing, but we'll get to that.
Sure.
So for dogs, about the most common thing, if you ask any animal control officer, shelter person working in the field, most commonly is that dogs are outside and they escape from the yard.
Mm-hmm.
Super common. They jump the fence is not secure, the gate was left open for whatever reason. That happens a lot. So that is the most common reason for dogs to get out, and then they go out either exploring or looking for food, or if they're intact, maybe they're looking to mate, and so they end up God knows where. They can travel pretty far.
Okay, so let's say Fido goes missing. He, for one or more of those reasons, he did get out of the yard. So walk us through then the next steps once we realize, you know, Fido is gone and have a pretty good idea how he got out or at least why. So what are some of our initial steps then?
So the most important thing for the pet owner, and I think this is true for most dog owners, is to start looking as soon as you realize the dog is missing. So they should look in the immediate area because maybe the dog just got out 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Looking around the neighborhood. And then if the search is not successful in that initial stage, what's important is to get the word out. Because what we find in dog searches is that the more eyes you have on your search, the better.
Yeah.
And there are many different things people can do. But that initial search, putting out signs and alerting the neighbors can also be very helpful because people will see the sign and say, oh, yeah, I saw a white dog yesterday. I'm going to call that number. And, of course, checking your shelter because animal control does pick up dogs. Most communities have laws against dogs being at large. So it's super important to do that also right away because hold periods are short in many states.
Right. So, yeah, that without even realizing there could be a ticking clock for your missing dog. So you kind of brought this up. So at some point, I'm obviously going to discuss this, but maybe this is a good time to delve a little further into it. Let's spend a moment discussing posters and flyers. I mean, when I go to our neighborhood grocery store, there's a bulletin board, and amongst the notices posted are missing pet flyers, which I have to say are generally quite crummy looking, and I would think extremely ineffective, you know, hand scrawled notebook paper, and a lot of times don't have photos or key details. So I think, geez, I'm sure these people are super bummed, but I just don't know if they're putting their best foot forward. So what tips can you offer for flyers and or posters?
So you want them to be visible and you want them to be simple. And there's some examples on our website. And the main thing is to put, a lot of people don't own pets, so they don't know what a Portuguese water dog is or something like that. So if you just put missing big black dog or something like that and have a picture, or white poodle nails painted pink, really basic information. And so that when people spot the animal or think they spot the animal, that they will give you a call. A clear phone number. These flyers should be typed. They should be in large font. And I realize, you know, people are working with the time and the resources they have. And obviously, if you're in an area that's wet or rainy, you're going to want to have them covered or laminated somehow to prevent them from just melting after one day.
Sure.
And people also have to be careful to observe sign ordinances because some towns don't allow signs or postings, and so you want to check into that before putting things in public places. Obviously, the bulletin board, like you mentioned, is a place where people are invited to post things, so that's always going to be okay. But as far as telephone poles and places where you see signs, some areas don't want that. You may spend a lot of time, and the next day find that they've all been taken down.
Yeah, that's tricky because I think there are certain zoning and other laws in different places. And sometimes I think if you live in some of those areas or where there's a weird sort of community association thing or whatever, but that's also at least one of the areas where you'd certainly want to get the word out. I'm not advocating breaking the law, of course, but I'm just thinking that sometimes I know people say, I got to get our dog back or try. So I'm going to put these up here and hope they last long enough to for people to drive around. Because isn't that part of the other thing is that the idea, especially in your kind of immediate area, depending on how long the dog's been out or gone, that really people in your immediate area, if they could be driving around and see something that, again, is clear and simple, especially with the photo of that dog, isn't that often a very effective technique because that dog might just be two streets over and you just haven't seen them yet?
Right. And that gets back to what I said about finders keeping a pet. So maybe the dog only got a block away and it's a friendly dog, so someone brought it into their house, but they don't know who you are and where you live. So you're right. The dog could be just around the corner,
yeah,
but maybe in someone's home and they're looking for you. So having those signs in the immediate neighborhood at intersections, you know, if you're in a community that's gated or that has a main street that everyone kind of drives up, that's a good spot. And if there's concerns about ordinances and so forth, you can always look into putting the signs on private property. You can put them on your own property, talk to your neighbors, they can put it in a window, and just like people put political signs and things like that. You can put it, especially if you have a big window facing the street. You can use those little signs with the wires that stick into your lawn. So there are some other options. And as far as at stores and malls, maybe if you just talk to the management, they'll give you a spot spot to put a sign that isn't the telephone pole. So we just don't want people to waste time and get frustrated and find that all their signs have been thrown away.
Yeah. And I do think that even in areas where you might know, hey, I'm not really allowed to post here. I mean, if it is private property, but not your own, I think under the circumstances, if you ask that proprietor or that, of course, that neighbor and just say, look, Fido is missing. I'm desperate to try to get the word out. Would it be okay to post this here? I think at least 9 times out of 10, the person's going to say, yeah, you know, at least for a few days, sure, or whatever. So
yeah, and most people really do mean well and want to help. They just don't want signs all over the place. You see them with yard sales and so forth, and then they never get taken down. And another good option for people is a service through the post office, which is called Every Door Direct. Now, you're not supposed to put flyers in mailboxes. That's just for mail. But with this service, you can make up a card of varying sizes. The information is on the post office website. And they can be mailed to every address in any specific area. You look on a map and you pick an area and you pay the fee, and it's actually less than first class mail.
Hmm.
And the mail carriers will drop them in every box. So you can cover a whole area, a whole city in one day, which is, of course, there's a cost for that, but it's easier than you walking from house to house, putting a flyer under the mat or on the door.
Yeah. So and I gather
door to door. Right. It's good for like a really small area, but if you want to blanket the area, that's a good tool to use.
Yeah. And it sounds like it's targeted by zip code, right? So you really
it
do.
Is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. Cool. Well, I'm going to get a caller involved in the conversation here, Bridget, one sec. But since you had alluded to the Mission Reunite website, I just want to mention that it's missionreunite.org. So again, for you mentioned that that's where people could see examples of effective posters and flyers and a lot of other information. Again, it's missionreunite.org. Let's get a caller involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Bridget Wasson.
Hi.
I
am calling because I had a dog. She was an Anatolian Shepherd, and she was bred. I took her to our summer home with my husband and my youngest son, and I actually tied her out in the backyard because she didn't do well alone inside. So we went down. We went for a quick boat ride, came back, and she was gone and got off the line that we had her tied to. And so I went back, and she had been where we were with the boat. I saw her paw print. So I immediately went down to the animal control shelter. This is in Michigan, by the way.
Okay.
But I told them, I have an Anatolian Shepherd. Her due date is June 21st that year. She has a reddish-pink collar on. You know, she's about this high. She weighs about this much. She has broad chest. So I tell her everything, and I'm like, okay, all right, well, we'll keep an eye out. We put ads in the paper. Turns out, and I had to go back downstate to where we were living, but my mother, she kept putting posters up and things. Anyway, she was going in a circular pattern, so my mom actually saw her 12 miles from where my house was and stopped, and Lexus wouldn't go near her, and I drove all the way upstate thinking that she'd still be there. I had somebody locate her. She was in town at that point, and I realized she was going in a circular pattern looking for me, and I was getting very frustrated because her due date came and went, and I called the animal control, went up there one day to take my mother to a doctor appointment, went in the shelter, and they were really busy, and she said, oh, just go on back there and look. We have a lot of shepherds. And I'm thinking, oh no, this is an Anatolian Shepherd. So
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but we got so little time for all the stuff we want to cover. So is there an outcome to the story? Or
I got my dog. She had her puppies exactly on the day due. And the animal control officer said, wow, we didn't know that was an Anatolian Shepherd. They found her, and they said she was in the town and dug herself a hole to have her pups underneath somebody's house. They went and got her. They never called me, even though the description was 100% everything that I told them. So it needs to be an educational outreach to the shelters also. They were going to put her down the next day.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that story, and I'm glad you found her. And I'd like to think that was a bit of an anomaly, although it sounds like the specifics of the dog kind of worked, cut both ways in a sense. But that caller does remind me, Bridget, of something I, of course, was going to get into anyway. And so let's talk a little bit about tags and chips and how those figure into our overall conversation here.
Okay, sounds good. And to the caller, first of all, I'm so glad you got your dog and her puppies back. I also have an Anatolian Shepherd, so I understand the breed and how people don't know what they are and how they are a little different. And they're not necessarily, they're not Labradors. They're not going to run up to just anybody. But unfortunately, what she describes is quite common, that there are many shelters and making a lost report often doesn't do anything. It's not like someone is checking those lost reports daily. And as the caller mentioned, that outreach and education are needed for shelters. And that's one of the things that we work on, is that if you have someone sitting there checking those reports daily and also checking with neighboring shelters, because maybe you went to shelter A and the dog is at shelter B, if you can call around, then that dog could go back to its owner the same day instead of sitting there, possibly being euthanized or having to be put up for adoption or what have you. But unfortunately, that is very common, and owners cannot rely on making a lost report. So they really have to be proactive themselves.
Yeah, which brings us back to the efforts, the posters, the flyers. But again, I do think that making sure that there are effective tags on the animal, and going to guess that you're sort of pro microchipping.
Yeah, so that's super important too on the owner's part. So yeah. Everybody has a part in this, whether it's
that's right.
The owner, other people in the community who are helping, and at the shelter. So collars and tags are low tech. They're very effective. Anyone can read them. If your dog gets out, the person across the street can call you and you can get your dog back. Chips are great because it's a lifetime registration. Even if the collar falls off, the microchip is still there. Now, the only caveat is that the dog would have to be taken to a vet or shelter to be scanned. And then there's some issues around microchipping that we can talk about with registration and so forth. But the owner should have a collar and tag and microchipping, because that is really good insurance that even if your dog ends up in another area, you don't know where to look for them, somebody can contact you and you can get your pet back.
And I would assume that once somebody finds a dog and they decide, well, we got to do something, so they do take it to the shelter. As a matter of course, wouldn't that shelter scan for a chip right off the bat? Or
they do. And
yeah.
Every shelter at this point, it's usually their policy. And in many areas, it's the law that they have to scan for a chip. However, it's not a perfect system. The batteries may be low on the scanner. The person scanning may not hit the exact spot where the chip is. So It's not a perfect system. So one shouldn't rely on that. You should still be out looking at the shelters.
I want to make sure we get everything in. But one thing before we move on to maybe an altogether different kind of animal is, as we're talking here, and I was thinking about our caller's input as well, is I think it's important, and you know a lot more about this than I do, to address in your mind, but sometimes even on the flyer or the poster, what kind of dog it is in terms of the behavior. Is the dog super shy and skittish? And so that's a dog that would be approached a certain way, or maybe not approached, and just like, hey, call this number, but try not to approach because they'll take off like a shot. So aren't there some of those elements that also would figure into a more successful way of recovering the dog in this case?
Yes, you bring up a really good point in that people should, again, keeping the information really simple on the flyers and posts. But what we recommend is that if you can put on your poster, do not chase or do not try to catch the dog, just call the number. If you have a sighting, just call. And then the owner or their agent can go out and look for the dog. Because what we've seen happen, for example, there was a dog in my area in Sonoma County that was missing. And it ended up getting a lot of media attention and being on the radio and in the newspaper. And there were posses of people going out trying to catch this dog who meant well, but didn't know what to do, weren't coordinated with one another. And the dog ended up getting hit by a car. She lived, thank goodness, but she lost a leg and eventually was captured. But it's just a good example of too much of a good thing. You have a lot of people looking who aren't coordinated, and so it ends up just getting in the way.
Yeah, and one of our emailers is kind of underscoring, I think, what we've already established, but I think in the wake of the caller, maybe it is important to underline this, that the flyer really needs to have a picture. And so that if someone doesn't, you happen to have an Anatolian Shepherd, but a lot of us might not know what that means or what to look for unless we're looking at a picture of that specific dog that's missing and they, okay, I can keep an eye out for that. Or, hey, I just saw that run around the park 20 minutes ago or whatever. So, again, just seems very crucial to have a picture on just because, again, if it's an unusual dog or a breed and you just say something that doesn't necessarily click with a lot of people or the average person, again, your chances of effectively recovering that dog go down, or at least the time is going to be much longer.
Exactly. And that's why it's important for owners as proactively to have good photos of their pets. There's an app called Finding Rover that you can actually upload pictures of your dog and save them there. And they also use facial recognition technology to match dogs in shelters, and that's used in some communities. But it just underscores the importance of having good photos. So if that day comes, you can show the unique markings. Again, the description, nobody knows what an Anatolian Shepherd is, but you say big tan dog, white chest, black face. People will remember that, the picture.
Right. The picture, again, seems pivotal, especially in this kind of instance, but just generally. And before we move on in our remaining time to some cat talk, one of our other emailers just noted, our Humane Society has a bulletin board for lost pets that everyone sees going in. So she's suggesting, ask if the shelter allows you to put up a poster with a photo at the Humane Society or shelter itself.
Yes, and some do have that. But what's also important is for people to cross-check that. And that's a task that volunteers can do if staff are very busy, because it's tedious. You have hundreds of reports. So it is good to have that posted, but for someone to manage that, organize it, call people and find out if they have found their pet, and cross-check it with other lost and found reports.
Yeah. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Bridget Wasson, president of Mission Reunite, which aims to assist pet owners whose animals are missing and offers guidance on how to prevent pets from going missing. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So now, missing cats are a horse of a different color, to totally mix my metaphors. So what are some of the key things to keep in mind if, say, Fluffy goes missing?
Well, super important for cats is that 9 times out of 10, they're going to be very close to home. So an indoor cat who goes missing may actually still be in the house. Unfortunately, that saying, curiosity killed the cat, is true, and they get into things you wouldn't believe, like couches, boxes, walls.
Yeah.
So it's important to do a very thorough physical search in the home and then immediately around your home, under the house, around the neighbor's house, across the street, because very rarely do they go far, especially if they're an indoor cat.
So if they're indoor, outdoor, how does that alter what you do? I mean, obviously you're going to look for them sort of in the house if they're spending any time in the house. But if they are indoor, outdoor, or even spending predominant amount of their time outdoors, how do you look then?
Now, if they go outdoors, they're going to have a larger area because they're familiar with the area, so they're comfortable. And it's going to vary depending on what type of area you live in, if it's very isolated or if you're in town or an apartment complex. So the cat may wander further and perhaps visit other people. So you're going to want to search a little further out and notify the neighbors, because we've had cases where, for example, in my own neighborhood, a neighbor's cat was missing. It was a black cat with no tail. So very easy to recognize.
Yeah.
And then they posted on Nextdoor, a neighbor like a block away said, oh, that cat's been eating at my house. So, so the cat wasn't really lost. He was just having a snack a block over.
But that does go back to what you're saying, which I learned the hard way many years ago when our cat went missing. And we did, I think, all the things. We didn't do it as smartly as we're talking about today because we didn't know that much stuff, but we certainly did poster flyers, talked to the neighborhood, went calling all around, looked all around. But it turns out he was only one street over in a house with a huge, tall wall, and by this time he was a little bit of an older cat, so all we could figure out is somehow he got in there but couldn't get out. Mm-hmm. And even though we had gone through that street before calling his name and something, nothing happened, and then I went through another thing, and I heard this faint cry that sounded familiar, and sure enough, there he was. But yeah, he was one street over. So that whole thing about they're usually pretty close, I mean, we had been told that, but we thought, well, we've looked really close. But
right.
You know, sometimes.
And when you hear the stories like your story, you'll hear it again and again and again. And that's why it's so important for people to look, because you bring up a good point that often the animal is stuck. They get stuck in things outside in a neighbor's shed or garage. Maybe they went in and then the neighbor closed the door, not knowing. They could have been hit by a car. They could have eaten poison. So waiting for them to come home is not the right thing to do. They could be out there suffering and needing medical attention. So you need to be actively looking.
Yeah. So we're in our final couple of minutes or so, Bridget, but I'm going to ask a few more questions. And then here's an emailer question that might be a little bit too specific for you to address, but there might be something general you could apply. This one says, if your microchip is in the Hillsborough County database, is it by default entered into the national database?
Good question. And the basic answer is no. There are about 20 different registries at this point in the U.S. for microchips. So the person may be talking about the county where the animal was registered or where they have a license. Sometimes those are connected. But what you want to do is call the registration that the chip is connected with. So it may be Home Again, it may be PetLink, it may be Found Animals, or one of the many others. And you want to make sure that it's registered with current information and to update that if you move or give the pet away to another person. So the owner needs to look into that and make sure that they have it registered with the National Registry. Nothing is automatic. People should not assume that.
Sounds like you do have to take some steps, but it also sounds like that can be done fairly simply.
Yes. Yeah, many of them, like Found Animals, you can just do it online and it's free. So they all vary, but they're much easier today than they were 20 years ago.
Okay. So in our remaining moment or so, Bridget, let's talk a little bit about prevention. So we've talked about different ways to try to look for pets and different search techniques and getting the word out, et cetera. But what measures can we all that have pets take to prevent that pet from going missing in the first place? Are there two or three key steps that you could outline for us?
There are. And the most important and probably the most obvious is to keep your pets secure in your home and to keep your dogs inside, or if they're in the yard, make sure that it's secure. Try to keep your cats on your property. I realize many people let their cats outside, but especially when people move or they're traveling and they let their cat outside, there's a good chance that they're going to go missing. So there's that. And then part two is having that identification. Make sure all your pets are microchipped. It's very inexpensive now and often includes registration for $20 or $30, lifetime registration, and the ID tags on the dogs. You can get a license tag, but also get the tag just with your cell phone number on it. So anyone can call you if your pet gets out. But if they end up at a shelter, like the caller said, where the staff said, oh, there's a lot of shepherds. If yours is one of 10 shepherds, how is anyone going to know to contact you?
Yeah. So make it easier for everybody to stay together or to quickly be found if somebody does wander off.
Exactly.
All right, Bridget, thank you so much. We've been speaking with Bridget Wasson, again, the president of Mission Reunite. The website, one more time, is missionreunite.org. They're also on Facebook, et cetera. So, Bridget, thanks so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals and giving us all this great info and tips.
Thank you so much.
Later on the show, we'll hear an animal song of sorts from the new album by Nico Case, herself a real animal advocate. Right now, though, it's time to step into the comedy corner. For a variety of reasons, I've been thinking about Richard Jenny lately and very much about this piece, a longer one than we ordinarily have time for, but we're going to try to hear it today. This is Richard Jenny with a piece called Fred Robster in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
So I'm out last night at a famous restaurant. I don't know if I could mention the name on the album. It might not be nice. It rhymes with Fred Robster. And it's a great place to go. Just don't sit next to the tank where they keep the lobsters. Very depressing. The lobsters always have that look of, any word from the governor? That's why you have to have like 4 or 5 drinks and then order. Because once you're drunk, you don't care who you send to their death in a boiling pot. Now you're drunk, and they're going, can we help you? And you got that Emperor of Rome attitude. Yes. Bring me the brown one. He amuses me. The impertinent one on the right. Seize him! Have him boiled immediately. Would you like a beverage? Wine! Bring me wine! Will there be anything else? Yes, find out why all the Romans in the movies have English accents. Quickly! So sad. They're like the only... They had a sign up, the lobsters were flown in. How cruel is that? Think about that. Let's say you're a lobster, right? You've never been on an airplane before. a fair assumption. What else can you think but you've won the lobster sweepstakes? You're on a plane, magazine, belt around the tail. Not bad. Not only am I getting a free trip, I'm earning valuable frequent lobster miles. Next thing you know, you're locked in a tank. Both your hands are tied. Everybody in the place is wearing a bib with your picture on the front of it. You want to talk to my travel agent right away? What happened to the friendly skies, huh? And they're one of the only animals that have to put up with being alive in the restaurant. If you go to a steakhouse, folks, no cow tank. You don't see them bring a live cow. What do you think of this one, buddy? This is the best cow we got. With a baked potato, I don't think you go wrong. Say the word, I got a gun, I'll blast the crap out of him right here. This is the best cow. Hey, put your head up. The hell's wrong with you? It's a customer. You want this job or don't you? Right, and there's the cow over there. Why don't you have a lobster? Why don't you have a lobster? And the lobster's going, why don't you mind your freaking business? The man has made his dinner selection, fat boy. Sir, if I may say so, a fine choice it was tonight. Now.
That was the late and obviously great Richard Jenny with a piece called Fred Robster, taken from his album entitled Greatest Bits. Now let's hear something new from Nico Case, who not only makes great music and is a huge champion of animals and animal welfare, but is absolutely fabulous on Twitter. You should follow her instantly if you aren't already. Meanwhile, here's Last Lion of Albion, new music from Nico Case on Talking Animals on WNF.
Down a Roman drain and summon Mars. Last line.
That was the splendid Nico Case with Last Lion of Albion from her also splendid new album, Hell On. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Loroy and Radioactivity, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including in the noon hour, Midpoint with Nola Lillet. Then at 1 p.m., John Gilmore presides over executive session. Then the music kicks back in at 2 p.m. with Scott Elliott in the All Souls edition of It's the Music. Meanwhile, on this show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll be offering a copy of the acclaimed and influential film, Blackfish. In fact, let's get to that now. Time to do Name That Animal Tune. It is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. There will be a prize again, a copy of Blackfish, to the first person who goes 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this double animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Johnny is a joker, he's a bird, a very funny joker, he's a bird. But when he jokes my honey, he's a dog, his joking ain't so funny, what a dog. Johnny is a joker that's a trying to steal my baby, he's a bird dog. Johnny sings a love song like a bird, sings the sweetest love song you ever heard. But when he sings to my gal, what a howl. Just a wolf dog on the prowl. Johnny wants to fly away and whoop and love my baby.
Can you name that animal, double animal tune? Oh, it looks like we might have someone who can. Let's even try that right now. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. You're on the air live. Can you name that animal tune?
I'm gonna guess Tokyo.
Oh, shoot. Not quite. It's got, I'll just give you one further clue. It's a double animal song, so meaning there's two animals in the title if you want to take one last stab.
Oh my goodness. I have no idea.
Okay. We'll try back next Wednesday. Thanks for trying.
Thank you.
Hi, you're on Talking Animals. You're on WNF live on the air. Can you name that animal tune?
Yeah, it's Bird Dog.
There you go. Do you know the artist by, as a bonus point?
Everly Brothers.
Yeah, wow, you're on a clean sweep. Okay, cool. What is your first name, sir?
It's Rob, R-O-B.
Okay, Rob. Well, I'm going to send you a copy of Blackfish. I'll come back and get your information after we wrap up the show. But congratulations and well done, sir.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Okay, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Loroy is up next with Radioactivity. Next week again, I will not be here, but Bev Capshaw and Ronnie Elliott will be. Don't miss them. Always a great, great show when they sit in. Tremendous music, all kinds of animal songs even I've never heard, and just wonderful stuff. So that's next Wednesday. And then the following Wednesday, August 15th, I'll be back for that show about wildlife trafficking with U.S. Attorney Jim Esterly, who is a real expert on wildlife trafficking and different methods now to combat illegal wildlife trafficking. So it should be, I think, a pretty good, interesting show. So I invite you to tune in then. I also invite you to visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too, and sign up for those. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow me on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other scintillating news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Talking Animals on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Community conscious radio, homegrown, handpicked music and news. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals.